You are on the line, live on ESPN, 106.7 in Auburn, and Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. Online on foxsports983.com and espnau.com. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Happy Thursday, everybody. February 24th, 2022. If you want to call into the show, 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. Trevor on the phones. Give my man a call. We want to hear from you. Jacob, how you doing today, my man?
Doing good, man. It is Thursday, which means it's almost Friday. I'm leaving out tomorrow evening after work, heading up to Birmingham, then going to Knoxville for the weekend for Auburn's big matchup at Tennessee. So just trying to get through the work week, man. But I'm here, excited to be here. And as usual, we got a good show planned.
That's right. A ton of stuff on the docket today. We're going to start off talking a little Auburn football as they have hired Ike Hilliard as wide receivers coach. I spoke a little bit about this yesterday with Jacob Hillman. Now Jacob Goins back with me on the show today. So we're going to get his thoughts on Ike Hilliard, as well as we will give our takeaways from Auburn's 77-64 win over Ole Miss. Of course, there were some other big results in college basketball. We will break down some of those from yesterday evening. Auburn baseball exploded for a 12-run win over Troy. They're amping up for their weekend series coming up, as well as in hour number two, we will have Zach Blackerby of Locked On Auburn and Auburn Daily to speak with us at 3:30 p.m. here on the program with us. Let's open up the show now. We're taking your calls for the entire first hour. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. Your thoughts on anything going on in the sports world. If you want to call in about Ike Hilliard, anything going on, we'll take your calls about it. Auburn football hires Ike Hilliard as wide receivers coach. What does this mean for Auburn, Jacob? Your overall thoughts on this hire, because this is a splash, my man.
Well, first of all, glad to be back from yesterday. Of course, took the day off to go call Lee Scott baseball.
Who are you? Why are you here?
So it's good to be back. You and Hillman had a great show yesterday. I was able to listen to the first hour on my way up to Lynette, Alabama. But I didn't get to comment on this yet, so I'm excited to do so. And as Auburn football, they hired Ike Hilliard as the wide receivers coach. Man, I like the hire. I think it's a home run. And I say that for many of the reasons that you and Jacob Hillman covered yesterday, that this guy has been around the game of football for years and years and years. He knows what he's doing. He played high-level college football. He played, 10 years in the pros as a pretty darn good wide receiver. And then he's been coaching in the NFL for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And he's coached some big-time names in the NFL. I think he is the perfect fit for what Auburn is trying to do. I think he's got the hard-nosed coaching ability that Brian Harsin wants to bring in, that Brian Harsin has himself. And no, we don't know a ton about this guy, but I think his track record speaks very highly of him, and we don't know what he's going to be able to do coaching at the college level for Auburn and recruiting-wise, but I think him being able to put guys in the league and develop guys to be NFL wide receivers, I think that's going to be able to recruit itself. And we've already seen he's already offered a wide receiver at the JUCO level, the top JUCO wide receiver in all of college football at the JUCO level. He already sent out a scholarship offer to the kid. So
Malik,
he's already
Benson, if you want to go look him up.
Malik Benson, that's right.
Georgia's offered him over the last 2 days. Miami has offered him over the last 2 days, as well as Auburn has jumped in on the offer sheet.
And so for people that said, and I didn't really get to see a whole lot of the takes on this hire yesterday. I was busy calling Lee Scott baseball, but I think it's a home run hire. And I think if you
it's
said
much
he's not
better
going
than
to recruit,
we thought Auburn yeah. was going to make considering the last month's events.
You're exactly right. Cause we had no idea who Auburn was going to get. And at first I was like, who is this guy? But then all you had to do was a quick Google search, and you found out real quick who this guy is. And for people that say he's not going to recruit, it's day one on the job, and he's already made an offer to a wide receiver.
If you're 30 years old, you know who this man is. If you're younger than 30 years old, you may not.
And that's us, my friend.
This is a big name from the SEC. He was an All-American. He was in the same receiving corps as Chris Doering at Florida. He had over a 1,000-yard season at Florida. He was the number 7 overall draft pick in the 1997 NFL draft to the New York Giants. And if you stay in the league for 12 years, you did something right. He spent two stretches, one with the Giants and one with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And as Bill Cameron pointed out yesterday on the drive, I was with him on the program yesterday. As Bill Cameron pointed out, he was teammates with Carnell Williams when both of those guys were in Tampa together. That may have been somewhat of a connection here to try and bring Ike Hilliard to Auburn. Who knows? We'll only have to wait to find out. But this is an awesome move. Not only did he have an extensive playing career in the NFL, he has an extensive coaching career in the NFL where you're going to recognize these names, Jacob, because you are under 30 years old. Brandon Marshall, Pierre Garçon, DeSean Jackson, Juju Smith-Schuster, Chase Claypool, Deontay Johnson. The list goes on and on. Terry McLaurin, he's coached some massive names in the NFL, guys that have massive seasons in the NFL under his tutelage. It wasn't just, oh, he coached them, and then later on in their careers, they had big years. No, he coached these guys while they were having big years in the NFL. This is an awesome move from a coaching standpoint, from a development standpoint. Once again, recruiting, we'll have to wait to find out. But I said this on the drive yesterday. If you liked the Nick Eason hire, you will love this hire. And that's nothing against Nick Eason, but if you'll remember when Nick Eason was hired out of the NFL, a lot of people asked themselves, who? And he had a good track record in college. He was a good, I think he was an All-American at Clemson. He definitely was all ACC at Clemson, so he had a good college career, played in the NFL, had about a 10-year NFL career, right? Transitions to being a coach, just like Ike Hilliard. Was just, you know, about 5-6 years behind Ike Hilliard in terms of his coaching career when he got started and when his NFL career ended. And you look at Nick Eason, he didn't have quite the accolades or quite the coaching resume that a guy like Ike Hilliard has, nor a playing resume that Ike Hilliard has. And he ends up being an excellent hire for Auburn and one of Auburn's best position coaches this past year. And a lot of people were wondering if he was going to be able to recruit because he hadn't had to do it yet. And guess what? He figured out how to do it, and he did it really well, and he helped Auburn bring in some high-quality players along the front seven out of this last recruiting class. So why can't Ike Hilliard do that when I'm convinced that he could probably show up to a recruit's living room or a transfer portal player's living room, open up a binder, and flip through all of the NFL players that he's coached and tell them the stories that he has of those guys and how he helped those guys become superstars, as well as he can also share his personal story of how he became a top seven draft pick. Not top seven round draft pick, a top seven overall pick in the NFL draft. Everybody wants to make it to the league. This guy's got the blueprint, not only how to make it in the league, but also how to make it, like survive in the league, stay in the league long term. He knows how to do that from a technique standpoint. So I imagine recruiting's going to take care of itself. This is a splash hire. You know where I stand. I may be entirely too hyped for this, but I am blown away that Auburn was able to make a move like this.
Well, I don't see how you get at any of a better hire than this guy right here. He's got the coaching experience. He's got the playing experience, the developmental experience. He's got it all. And I think that is all going to transfer extremely well into this Auburn football program that Brian Harsin is trying to build. This come in, work hard, be great, win football games, and let's try to go to the league. And I think that's exactly what this hire of Ike Hilliard at wide receiver coach is going to do. And obviously Auburn has had some struggles in the wide receiver room over the past few years. And I think a guy like this can go out, like you said, on the recruiting trail into the transfer portal and pick up some guys that are going to be studs. And whether they're the highest graded wide receiver when they show up, they may not be, but he may be able to develop them when they get here and make them unbelievable superstars to be and be like the center of the offense at Auburn and then have a legitimate shot to go to the pros. And so if you're out there listening, we want to know what your opinion is of this new hire for Auburn. Ike Hilliard, the new wide receiver coach for Auburn. And not just your opinion on this hire specifically. How does this affect your opinion of the offensive coaching staff heading into the spring? The holes are filled. The coaching staff is set in stone for Auburn football. Give us a call here on the line. Let us know what you think. Does it boost your confidence in Auburn going into the spring? Kind of leveled out? Do you not like the hire? Whatever's on your mind about it, we want to hear you. 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. We want to hear from you.
Something else that I want to add about this that Bill also brought up on the drive yesterday. Louisiana native, played college football in the state of Florida. Those two states are two areas where Auburn had some success in Florida, a lot of success in Louisiana, untraditional success in Louisiana this past recruiting cycle. And I imagine, I don't know if Auburn's looking to be there every year, right? Auburn's bread and butter has been Alabama, Georgia, and Florida over these last, 15, 20 years beyond, right? Auburn's recruiting base is Alabama, Georgia, and Florida all time. That's where Auburn lives at, right? But I imagine his connections in those two states in the Southeast, his name carries weight. People know who this guy is. He's also been coaching for 12 years, I imagine, across his time of coaching in the NFL, although it may not be collegiate experience. I imagine he has built relationships through the players he's coached, as well as with other coaches who probably have collegiate connections. I imagine he has a lot of connections in the Southeast. So this is an awesome move. I would be shocked if he doesn't turn out to be an excellent recruiter. I believe the drive's having Chris Doering on from 4 to 6, so I encourage everyone that's listening right now, just a promo for the drive coming up from 4 to 6 p.m. Tune in later on this afternoon. They're going to have Chris Doering of the SEC Network. Of course, you know him. He played wide receiver at Florida, held a record until Devontae Smith broke it for all-time receiving touchdown catches in the SEC. He happened to be in the same wide receiver room as Ike Hilliard, so he knows a thing or two. So stay tuned for that conversation coming up this afternoon on the drive. It'll be Chris Doering of the SEC Network. But there's just a lot to like about this hire. I can't really find any negatives with it. I want to change this conversation a little bit, though. Talk about this from a different angle now. We talked about this 2 days ago. Last time you were on the show, I asked you the question, what is your opinion of Auburn's offensive coaching staff? And I know that's what you were just fielding to our callers out there, which if you want to bring your opinion on that, 334-321-1390 or toll-free at 888-382-7502. A take that I had on this yesterday, and I want your thoughts on it. I think there's a lot more positive alignment, a lot more guys on the same page going into this year's spring when you look at the offense. And the coaching staff is what I really mean there, not just the players, but the coaching staff.
I would agree with that. I think the coaches on this staff now compared to last season, I think they all, this could be false, but just knowing who the coaches are before they got to Auburn or what they were in their previous position before the promotion within the program at Auburn, I think they all have the same mindset of, like I said before, you're going to come in as a player, you're going to come in here, we're going to work hard, but we're going to develop and we're going to get better each and every day, and we're going to try and go win some football games on the field and compete in the SEC, and in a few years, compete for a national championship. And I think that's what all of these coaches on this staff right now, offensively and defensively, I think they all have that mindset, because who also has that mindset? The head coach, Brian Harsin, and he'll tell you that firsthand. And that's a different style of football, that's a different style of coaching than what works at a lot of different places. But if you're going to run that type of program, everybody has got to be bought in. That's coaches and players. And so that's what you're going to see from this Auburn team in the next couple of years, unless Brian Harsin and the team has a horrible year, then he may not survive. But in the next few years, if Brian Harsin is still the head coach, you're going to see every coach that coaches here is going to have that exact mindset, and every player that plays here is going to have that mindset as well.
Another point that I want to make about this move with Ike Hilliard, Mike Tomlin is a coach that I respect tremendously. I'm a Cleveland Browns fan. Cleveland Browns fans hate everything to do with the Baltimore Ravens and the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? But I can say this. I respect Mike Tomlin. He's a heck of a football coach. And Ike Hilliard's been with him the last 2 years. He's going to have picked up something from Mike Tomlin.
Well, Mike Tomlin's one of the best coaches to ever coach in the NFL. He's the most consistent coach there is. I mean, Pittsburgh is always a contender every single
season. Regardless of what's on the roster,
no matter
that is
what
a playoff contender
yes.
because of Mike Tomlin.
And you're exactly right that I. Hilliard had to have picked something up from Mike Tomlin. How could you not, working for the guy for 2 years? It's like working with a Nick Saban when an assistant goes to work for him and then he goes to be a coach somewhere else.
I don't know if I would go that far, but...
What do you mean?
I mean, Mike Tomlin hasn't won at the level that Nick Saban has won.
Obviously, yes, but I think...
That would be like Bill Belichick.
Yeah, but when you work around a guy who's like that, you're going to pick up the good qualities that he has as a coach. I mean,
you're talking about his personality.
Yeah, his personality, coaching abilities, coaching styles, that type of thing. Obviously, Tomlin and Saban are different levels, but hanging around somebody that is successful and is so hard-nosed as it is, I mean, Ike Hilliard's going to have some of that coming into Auburn, working in Pittsburgh for 2 years.
And I see some similarities between Mike Tomlin and Brian Harsin's approach to the game of football.
Yeah, I do too. I think, I mean, everybody knows in Pittsburgh, I mean, you work and you go in there, it's hard-nosed.
That's a blue-collar football organization.
And they're going to lower their head, and they're going to run at you and hit you really hard. And I think that's what Auburn is trying to do with Brian. That's what Brian Harsin's trying to do with Auburn. Whether it's going to work, only time's going to tell. But this hire, plus all of the other hires on this coaching staff, offensively and defensively, that is what Brian Harsin's trying to do. And I think everybody on this coaching staff is now on the same page, the same mentality. And now it's just going to see... Does it work? That's what it's coming down to. Will it work?
Two more talking points before we go to break. Number to call, 334-321-1390 or toll-free at 888-382-7502. One more positive, and then I want to ask you about negatives. I want to try and find a way to balance out this because we're talking a lot of positives. That may be true, but where can we possibly find something where it's like, all right, we need to wait and see. We need to see how this works for him at this level. We'll get to that in a moment. But something I want to point out. You look at the last 2 years, two guys that we've seen pop off for the Pittsburgh Steelers that were not household names. Chase Claypool kind of came out of nowhere. Let's just be real. That was 2 years ago, 2020. Pops off. Chase Claypool has an excellent year. This year, Deontay Johnson has over 100 catches, gets his first All-Pro, makes it to a Pro Bowl, those types of accolades. Not saying that he did something out of nothing, because there's talent in that room, 100%. But you look at the quarterback situation in Pittsburgh over the last 2 years, the fact that Big Ben, just simply put, he hasn't been what he was for the majority of his career. You look at the Auburn quarterback room, it's not looking awesome. Now, I think it can develop, and I think it can be consistent this year, but a lot of people would say that it's not necessarily a positive for Auburn right now. It's more of a negative at this point from a talent perspective. And then you also look at the talent inside the room for the receivers. We know some development needs to take place. This guy knows a thing or two about helping guys emerge out of nowhere.
Well, at the college level, that's what it's about. Because all of these guys, or most of these guys, are coming out of high school or transferring in from a place where they did not play. And that's what college ball is about, is developing these players, A, to make the college team better, and then B, to try to send these guys to the pros. And so if you can't develop, then you're worthless just about in the college game, because you have to be able to make players get better and make the team get better. You can't be the same team in the spring that you are in the fall, because that's not how it works. And so, especially in the wide receiver room, the quarterback room for Auburn right now, those guys are going to have to get developed, because when you look at this team, they are weak spots on the offense right now. And the offensive line is the same way. And so these guys are going to have to get developed. And if the coaches don't know how to do that, they better figure it out. Because if not, they're not going to be here very long.
Now, going back to what I was saying just a moment ago, trying to find a way to balance this discussion, because you and I are saying a lot of positive things. We love this hire. And I made the statement earlier. I said I may be entirely too hyped up for this. Now, I think it's a splash hire, and it's okay to be pumped up about this. I don't want to tear it down by any means. But where might there be any reservations with Ike Hilliard coming to Auburn?
That's a good question, because I
think it's fair to ask.
It's a fair question to ask, and I don't know. I'll be really honest. I don't know. If you have something, go ahead, because right now I like everything about it, but if you have something, hit me with it.
Here's something I want to know more about, and I did talk about recruiting earlier and how I think he can walk into a recruit's living room with a binder, and that's going to sell itself, right? But what's his personality like? Nick Eason, part of what made him a great recruiter was that he had the personality, right? And, of course, he had the NFL experience, and that sold itself. Ike Hilliard's NFL experience is more substantial than Nick Eason's, and the names that he's coached is more substantial than Nick Eason's, that is even going to sell itself better than what Nick Eason might have been able to sell recruits. But you still have to have the personality to be able to connect. Guys still have to want to come and play for you. We are kidding ourselves if we think that Ike Hilliard is the only coach on planet Earth that has these NFL connections and has this NFL resume and has coached these excellent players. Because let me go ahead and tell you, Nick Saban and Kirby Smart can walk into recruits' living rooms with a binder and flip through it and show them all the great players that they've sent to the NFL who are succeeding on Sundays currently that those recruits watch every Sunday, right? And some of those players are guys that they look up to, that they want to become, right? So we're kidding ourselves if we think that Ike Hilliard is the only guy on planet Earth that has those types of relationships. And so something that I do want to know is, does he have the personality to recruit? Is he a football cyborg, or is he able to make those connections? Because that's still a very important job. That's still a very important responsibility that comes with being a position coach. That's an okay reservation to point out because he's never done it before.
And the only thing that will help us with that is time. Time is the only thing that'll tell with what you're asking and what you're talking about. Personality, recruiting, all of that, whether he can develop anything. It's all based on time. So we're going to find out in the next 6 to 8 months whether this guy is going to be able to do it or not.
Now, with that being said, there are some position coaches that there are some position coach positions that naturally they have, you know, more swagger. They have more lively personalities than others, right? And wide receivers and cornerbacks, right? Those guys, when they played, they were chirping, right? They were chirping. They were loud. They were lively, vibrant personalities. And that kind of comes with the job. That kind of comes with the position, as I was pointing out. So that he probably does have that personality. He was a former wide receiver in the NFL. He's going to have swag, right? He played in New York and in Tampa Bay. He's going to have swag. So I would imagine that that's going to be a box that's checked. But, you know, that's something that it's okay to point out as a reservation is, can this guy recruit? Can he make those connections? Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to have your Radio Alabama Sports Minute, as well as we're going to talk some Auburn basketball as they knock off Ole Miss 77-64. You're listening to the Thursday edition of On the Line.
Welcome back in to On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins, Noah Gardner with you today on the Thursday edition of the show. First, we're going to take a look at the Radio Alabama Sports Minute.
I'm Noah Gardner with your Radio Alabama Sports Minute. Third-ranked Auburn men's basketball took down Ole Miss 77-64 in Auburn Arena on Wednesday night. The win advanced the Tigers to 25-3 overall and 13-2 in the SEC with a one-game lead atop the conference standings. The Tigers shot 46% as a team while holding Ole Miss to just 38% from the field. Some standout performers, Walker Kessler was dangerously close to his third triple-double of the season, totaling 12 points, 10 rebounds, and 8 blocks. Freshman phenom Jabari Smith had 15 points, 9 rebounds, and 5 assists. Auburn's next game is on Saturday at 3 p.m. as they take on number 17 Tennessee in Knoxville on ESPN. A look at some other college basketball scores from yesterday. Number 6 Kentucky overcame an 8-point halftime deficit to beat LSU 71-66. Number 7 Duke held on to beat Virginia on the road 65-61. Number 11 Providence and Xavier went to 3 overtimes with the Friars winning 99-92. Auburn football completed its coaching staff with the hire of Ike Hilliard as wide receivers coach. In addition to Hilliard's 12-year playing career in the NFL, he has been coaching in the league since 2011. Most recently, he was the wide receivers coach for the Pittsburgh Steelers for the 2020 and 2021 seasons.
I'm Noah Gardner, and that's your Radio Alabama Sports Minute.
Back live on the Line, Noah Gardner and Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. We've got a couple minutes here left in this segment before we come back for the third segment of our number one. We want your thoughts, taking your thoughts on last night's Auburn basketball game, as well as Ike Hilliard being named wide receivers coach. Anything going on in the sports world, we'll talk to you about it. Auburn baseball had a big win. That's coming up later on in this hour. But let's talk a little Auburn basketball here. We got about 2 minutes left here in this segment. Auburn Number three team in the nation takes down Ole Miss 77-64. A big night for several players involved. Most namely, it's good to see Zepp Jasper get some points, 15 on the night.
I was happy for him. He needed this game.
It's good to see him take more than one shot
and record something other than a rebound. You know what I mean?
Or a foul.
So, no, it was a huge game for Auburn. And I think this was the game that they needed to just get back in the flow offensively. And of course, for Zepp, and we'll break down the game on the other side of this break, but Zepp Jasper had a fantastic game. A game that not necessarily needed every time out from him, because he's not the point guard to drop 15 points every game. But it was good for him.
But I do think 7 or 8 from him on a nightly basis would really do this team some good.
I agree. And he was shooting the ball extremely well with a lot of confidence. Every time he stepped up and shot a three, he ran down the other end of the floor because he knew it was going in. And we have not seen that from Zepp Jasper almost at all this season, I don't think. Obviously, he's out there for playmaking and not turning the ball over, which, of course, he did a fantastic job again. But getting consistent points from him at good times in the game, I think will be key for this team down the stretch in March.
This is only the fourth time this year that Zepp Jasper has scored double digits. It's the first time that he has had more than 2 points in a game since January 29th.
That's wild. But again, we know his role is not to score. But like you said, consistent points and timely points will be big for Zepp Jasper because he is the starting point guard after all.
It's the first time he's had a non-0% field goal percentage since January 29th as well. His first made bucket since the Oklahoma game. Wild. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll talk more Auburn basketball takeaways from Auburn's 77-64 win over Ole Miss. You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-327-5202. Whatever's on your mind out there in the sports world, we'll talk to you about it. So far today, we've talked about Ike Hilliard being named wide receivers coach and why we think this is a splash knockout hire for Auburn football, as well as we just got into some of our takeaways from Auburn basketball's 77-64 win over Ole Miss. We were just discussing Zepp Jasper's impact on last night's game. A statistic there for folks out there, of course, he did miss some time, but this is the first game that Zepp Jasper has hit a shot, has recorded a field goal since January 29th against Oklahoma when he was 3 for 6. I think it was a breath of fresh air for the Auburn backcourt that has been struggling over the month of February, which is exactly the month that Zepp Jasper has been MIA.
Yeah, and when you look at the point guards, look at the three guards of Zepp Jasper, Katie Johnson, and Wendell Green, okay? Zepp Jasper had 1 assist, 2 turnovers, but that's okay because he had 15 points and he shot the ball extremely well, and that's still a low amount of turnovers. You had Katie Johnson, who had 2 assists, 1 turnover, perfect, and then Wendell Green, 4 assists and 1 turnover. So the guards did exactly what they were supposed to do, and they scored the basketball. Katie didn't really. He had a bad shooting night. He only had 2 points on free throws.
KD's been off for a couple of nights.
He's been off for the last couple of games, but the guards are so good that Zepp Jasper and Wendell Green can step up and make up for it. That's what's so good about having a three-guard system that Auburn is using, if you want to say a four-guard system with Flanagan, but we won't get into that. But the rest of the team, they spread the wealth around. They spread the points around. You had four guys, get into double figures. And that's big time. So Jabari didn't have to go off for 30 points last night, and Walker didn't have to have 20 or 25. They spread the wealth around. Zepp with 15, Jabari with 15, Walker with 12, and Wendell with 14. So spreading it around a little bit and getting more people involved makes the offense run a lot smoother. And Noah, I was talking to you before the show. I know Auburn only scored 77 points last night.
Only?
Well, they averaged over.
It was a good win.
It was a good win, and the offense looked good. Did Auburn shoot great last night? No, but they still shot 46%.
They shot their average last night.
They shot their average. And they looked good doing it. The offense looked good. The ball movement was good. The half-court offense was efficient. The shooting wasn't great at times. The defense got, I would say, lazy at times. The first four
still
minutes.
Still held them to 64, though.
Exactly. The first 4 minutes of each half was not good for Auburn. But other than that, I don't have a lot of complaints, man.
You know, they were at home, and I would have liked to have seen them cover. Not saying anything about the betting line, really. Just more so, it was a 13-point win against a bad basketball team. But I also have to check my expectations there and say this team's 25-3. It's college basketball. And how often do you beat someone by 17, 18 points, right? That's asking for a lot in college basketball, especially in this league that is so deep. And Ole Miss, I think, would have a better record in a lot of other conferences in college basketball, even at the Power 5 level, like if they were playing in the Pac-12 or the ACC. Maybe they're above 500, you know? So this Ole Miss team, they're not good. I would have liked to have seen Auburn shoot a little bit higher of a percentage at home, considering they were at home. But as you pointed out, it's a good win. The assist-to-turnover ratio was good. They finished with 16 assists. What scares me a little bit is they had like 10 at the end of the first half. They weren't moving the ball as well in the second half, I don't think, from an assist standpoint. 16 assists, though, to 12 turnovers. That's still a positive assist-to-turnover ratio, which is at times hard to do in college basketball. For comparison, Ole Miss had 11 assists to 12 turnovers. So I thought Auburn did a good job of moving the basketball around for the most part, for protecting the basketball. They fouled less than they have been over the last couple of weeks. They out-rebounded Ole Miss. I thought they did a lot of good things. A lot of different guys contributed. Last night was a good win. I thought they could have shot the basketball better, but last night was a good win for Auburn overall. And it's nice to see the backcourt have a nice night outside of KD Johnson. Of course, Alan Flanagan is still MIA right now, not playing well, but it was nice to see the point guards, I should say, have a good night, because I think it's more important for Auburn's point guards with what they have in the front court. It's more important that Auburn's point guards have good nights, both of them. I think if you can get a good game out of Wendell Green and Zepp Jasper, I'm not as concerned with what KD Johnson and Al Flanagan are doing. Now, I'd like to have them good games, but those guys, they can offer you something on defense, whereas their scoring's not as big of a deal, I don't think, if you've got Zepp Jasper and Wendell Green having a good night. Really, you just need two of the four guards playing well. I think I should maybe expand it out too, but I should say you do need one point guard having a good night from a distribution standpoint, because it's easy to isolate the front court, and for them to try and shoulder the load. There's a reason why Gonzaga didn't win the national championship last year. Baylor had a four-guard system and ran Gonzaga up and down the floor. Gonzaga had the best front court in college basketball, and I talked about this on the drive a little bit yesterday. Auburn is one of the most talented teams in the country. What scares me a little bit is the way that the backcourt's been playing, because backcourt's guard play, good guard play, is what wins championships. I don't care how good your front court is. We've seen a lot of great front court driven teams not make it all the way because their guards couldn't get it done. It's easier to isolate those front courts when guard play is not getting the job done. And so for Auburn, what scares me is if the guards aren't playing well in tournament time, Auburn will not win the national championship if that happens. And so guard play is extremely important. Auburn's got a wonderful front court, but Gonzaga is just the latest example of a team that has the best front court in basketball and still couldn't win a national championship. You remember those teams that had Jimmick Karnowski on it? The bearded menace of Gonzaga of the West,
yep.
Right? You remember those teams? Lost the national championship. Had the best front court. They had two guys in their front court that are currently playing in the NBA. Not good. Didn't win the national championship, right? You need the guard play.
And I agree. Guard play is huge. And I think Auburn's guards are playing. They played good last night. Alan Flanagan is just an outlier at this point. My opinion on him is still what it is. He is still not back from an injury. I don't think he should be starting. Look at his stat line. I'm not hating on the guy because I know he's gone through a lot, and I get that. But he had 3 points on 1 of 4 shooting, 1 of 2 from the free throw line, no assists and 2 turnovers with 4 personal fouls.
I think you should be starting, and here's why. Because I don't want to massively adjust the rotations at this point of the year.
At this point, yes. But on any other basketball team, I mean, is he a starter in the SEC? I don't know.
Now, maybe I would like to see Jalen Williams play more than 11 minutes than last night.
He had a great game last night.
But he got into foul trouble. He had 3 fouls, right?
Right.
And so that limited his minutes last night. There's only so many guys that you can give 20-plus minutes to, right? And so I get what you're saying. I like Al Flanagan playing, though. I think he could be a glue guy for Auburn. But if we're thinking that all of a sudden his scoring's going to pop off at any point, that may be something that you should put that dream away right now.
But in the first half, I will say that Flanagan played a good first half. He made the right plays, passing the basketball, making the extra pass. There was a couple times where he did that. And I remember I was sitting there with Erica, my girlfriend, and I was like, Alan Flanagan's playing good basketball right now. He made the right play, made the right pass. That's what he needs to do. But shooting 1-for-4, having no assist, and having 2 turnovers, and only scoring 3 points, that is not good guard play. 4 fouls, that's bad basketball. But if you take him out of the equation, Zeb Jasper, Wendell Green, and KD Johnson, like you said, you only need 2 of those guys to really have a good basketball game, because the other one, you know, it's almost like a rotation, you know what I mean? Now, if all 3 of them start playing out of their minds in a game, watch out, because this thing could get ugly for any other team. But you have Zeb Jasper, who had 15 points, and you had Wendell Green, who had 14 points, and those 3 guards, their assist-to-turnover ratio, 7-3 last night. That's perfect. That's more than perfect, because it's better than 2-1, so that's perfect for the guards. Last night for Auburn, the ball handlers, they're making plays rather than turning the ball over, and they're also scoring the basketball at a high rate. So I think Auburn's guard play, if they can continue to play as they did last night, Auburn's just going to continue to get better, because the eye test last night passed for me with Auburn.
Still talking some college basketball here on the Line. Noah Gardner, Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-382-7502. Looking at some other scores that happened yesterday evening, we will stay parked in the SEC because this result maybe had the most impact on Auburn. Kentucky, 6th-ranked Wildcats, overcome an 8-point halftime deficit. Auburn fans were getting excited at halftime because they thought, oh, this SEC championship, it's in the bag, right? Well, Kentucky pulls out a win at Rupp Arena, 71-66 over LSU.
And still without Sevier Wheeler and Ty Washington. I mean, this team is playing, they're playing good right now, and they're still not at full strength. I mean, they're playing good. They're not playing great, but they're playing good basketball. Overcome an 8-point deficit against LSU without your starting 2 players, like, they're playing good basketball. And I don't know what the timetable is on those 2 guys to get back healthy, but if Kentucky can get them back in the next week or two, watch out, because this team could really make some noise. And yeah, I did. I saw that score at halftime because I was at the Auburn game last night, and I was like, wow, you know, Kentucky, maybe the injuries have finally caught up to them. But no, they came back. And not that LSU is fantastic, but that's still a tough thing to overcome. And so the SEC technically still up for grabs so far in the regular season.
Kentucky's remaining schedule, they're at number 18, Arkansas, this Saturday at 1 on CBS. Bud Walton Arena is striping out the arena. Kentucky's Ooh. Coming to town, right? That's the reason why 20,000 people are going to be there, at least according to Kentucky fans. Then they'll have their last home game in Rupp Arena against Ole Miss on March 1st, and they'll round it out next Saturday at Florida in Gainesville at 1 p.m. on CBS. There could be another loss in there for Kentucky with 2 road games against teams that are Arkansas solidly in the field. Florida, they're looking for something to add to their resume because they are a bubble team.
If I had to pick one of those 3 games for Kentucky to lose, it would be the Arkansas game on Saturday. I think Kentucky will beat Ole Miss at home easily, and then I think Florida probably just won't have enough in the tank. I think Florida matched up much better against Auburn than they did, or that they will against Kentucky, because I think
Oscar Tshiebwe.
I think Oscar
just go
Tshiebwe,
ahead and say it.
Yeah,
Oscar Tshiebwe. Oscar Tshiebwe cancels out Colin Castleton
by a lot, because not that Tshiebwe is better than Kessler. They're just different players, man. Tshiebwe is just, he's a big dude, and he will muscle his way in. I think he'll get Castleton in some foul trouble, and I think Florida will get taken out of the game kind of early. So if I had to pick one of those remaining games for Kentucky to lose, I'd put it at the road. Wow.
You'd put
on the road
at Arkansas.
Yes, that's what I was trying to say, yeah. So not that I'm saying they are going to lose, but yeah, there's going to be 20,000 fans. It's going to be similar to the Auburn atmosphere when Kentucky comes to town to Arkansas, and it's going to be a tough road environment. I think Arkansas, if they play well, they can win that game.
100%. It's the defense for me with Arkansas that gives them a chance to win any game. The question is, are they going to make shots? By far, the better offensive team on paper, statistically, between those two teams is Kentucky. I stand by this statement. Arkansas is like Tennessee, and Tennessee's offense has really come a long way since the beginning of SEC play. They're knocking out the three ball at a higher clip than we've seen typical Rick Barnes-led teams do, but Arkansas shooting is not that good. They're not an efficient offensive team. They take a ton of shots. They have a lot of possessions. They play a strong defensive game. They're at home. They're going to shoot the basketball a little bit better. If the defense can play lights out, they're going to have a shot. Let's look at some other results. Triple overtime is what it took for number 11 Providence to get the win over Xavier that falls to 7-9 in the Big East. Providence at 13-2 in the Big East, 99-92 win after three overtime periods. They almost scored more in overtime, Providence did, than they did in any of the two halves.
Game of the night in the what conference?
Big East.
The Big East. That's right. One of the best conferences, one of the most exciting conferences in college basketball, the Big East. That game was insane, man. They went to overtime, then they were in double overtime, and Providence had a chance to go up by four with free throws. They missed the second free throw. They were up by three. Xavier inbounded the ball, ran all the way down the floor, and the dude pulled up from the three-point line, flying through the air, knocked it down at the buzzer to send it to triple overtime. Just a fantastic game. And then Providence, of course, finished it out with a seven-point victory. But I think people are starting to see that Providence is not what
their record looks.
Yeah, exactly. I think they're a good basketball team.
23-3, but they're not 23-3.
Exactly. I think they're going to get exposed, and not to the point of like a major upset, because I don't think Providence is as good as advertised because of some of the weaker teams they played in the Big East. But they're still a good basketball team. They still are 23-3, which is good for college basketball. I don't care what conference you play in. But that was still the game of the night last night in the Big East and in college basketball.
I'm going to take a jab at you. It's all love, brother. But a team that you said was playing better than Auburn struggled with a team that's only a couple of wins better than Vanderbilt. 65-61 win for number 7 Duke over Virginia. And you hate Virginia.
I do. And I expected Duke to come out and win that game by a lot, and they just did not. I didn't get to watch it. I was at the Auburn game last night, so I didn't get to watch that game. But a 4-point win on the road at a bad Virginia team is not what we're looking
Granted,
for.
Granted, they're 17-11 and 11-7 in conference, so I'm just kind of taking a jab there.
Yeah, fair enough.
Virginia's had an excellent month of February. They're 5-2 in February with two wins over Miami and one over Duke already. So Virginia, you know, they had that loss to Virginia Tech that made people shake their heads a little bit. And Virginia is on the bubble for the NCAA tournament. They're probably more of an NIT team because the ACC is not getting a ton of love. But this was a tough road game for Duke. Virginia's a basketball school. This is a tough road game for anybody. Virginia's still going to play a tough brand of defense. I'm just saying, I'm not sold that Duke's playing their best basketball right now in the month of February either. I think they have some offensive issues that they need to work through.
But I know they only scored 65 points, but they were playing Virginia, the defense of college basketball.
The slowest basketball in all of basketball.
Duke shot 48% last night, 41% from three. Their free throws were bad, 10 of 17. They only turned the ball over 8 times on the road. I mean, that's pretty good. They out-rebounded Virginia. And they out-blocked them, everything else. So I think I didn't get to watch it, so I don't know about the eye test. But on the stat sheet, it looked like Duke played a pretty good basketball game offensively. Defensively, they let Virginia shoot 44%, which is not great. 40% from three, which is normally pretty better than what Virginia normally does. But I don't know. I'd have to go back and watch this game. But just from looking at the score, you would say, wow, Duke really struggled to win this basketball game. So we'll see how Duke finishes out the season. I'm about to pull their schedule up. They've got at Syracuse, at Pittsburgh, and then at home against North Carolina. Those should all be wins for Duke going into the ACC tournament.
3-0, but you never know, man. That Duke-North Carolina game does not matter whatsoever.
But it's at Duke. So.
And what I mean by it doesn't matter whatsoever, it does not matter whatsoever what the records are.
You're right.
And I don't think it matters where it's being played at either. I don't think it's – because we've seen one team being inferior
You're right.
To the other go into the other team's place and win. Now, that is the last Duke-North Carolina game inside Cameron Indoor that has Coach K as the head coach. That probably factors into it a little bit. But UNC is a 20-win team. They are 12-5 in the conference.
That's wild.
They're 20-8. That's a team that wants to make the NCAA tournament. Right now, they're in the field. So I just they're only four wins less than Duke right now. It's very possible. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we wrap up hour number one with what's on TV tonight, as well as Auburn baseball exploding for a 12-run win over Troy. Wrapping up hour number one of the Thursday edition of On the Line. Noah Gardner, Jacob Goins with you. Fun show so far today. We've talked a little Auburn football, Auburn basketball, and now on deck, Auburn baseball. But before we get to it, let's take a listen to what's on TV tonight.
Hey everybody, it's Noah Gardner with What's On Tonight. New episodes of Law & Order run from 7 to 10 p.m. on NBC. Movie selection for tonight, Draft Day, is on AMC at 7. And live sports, let's take a look at the college basketball schedule for tonight. 6 p.m. time slot, Temple is at Memphis on ESPN2, and Maryland is at Indiana on FS1. 8 p.m. time slot, number 1 Gonzaga is at Bumble Team San Francisco on ESPN2. Ranked battle in the Big Ten as number 22 Ohio State clashes with number 15 Illinois on FS1. Ranked Pac-12 teams are on the road at 8:30 on ESPN. Number 12 UCLA is at Oregon. Rounding out the night at 10 p.m., number 2 Arizona is at Utah on FS1, and number 16 USC is at Oregon State on ESPN2. The NBA is back from the All-Star break with two games on TNT. At 6:30, it's the Celtics at the Nets, and at 9, it's the Warriors at the Trailblazers. I'm Noah Gardner, and that's what's on TV tonight.
Back live on the Line, Noah Gardner, Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Let's head to the phone lines now, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-382-7502. Shane with us now. Shane, we got about 2 minutes here left before we get out of here for the end of the hour. What's up, my man?
Yep, sounds good. I was listening to you guys' comments earlier, and about, you know, there's no concerns from our game last night. But are y'all not concerned about how we start the game and start the second half? I mean, with a really good elite team, we're not, you know, that's going to be detrimental. If you don't start off well, then the other team does, you know, against a Gonzaga or whoever it is that we meet, you know, deep in the tournament, if we get that far. What if they don't have those starts like we tend to do? It's weird because the first half of the season, it was like it was totally different, and now it seems like we're struggling out of the gate on both sides of halftime.
Shane, we appreciate the call, my man. We'll touch on that because we're about to get out of here in about 45 seconds. We'll touch on it. We appreciate the call, Shane. 334-321-1390. I'll say this in response to Shane's comments. I've been saying this for a month and a half, 2 months, and it was the unpopular thing to say when Auburn was on a 19-game winning streak, because Auburn was winning. But I don't think this is a problem that's all of a sudden appeared just because Auburn started losing games. I think this has been an issue all year long. And I really started talking about it at the beginning of January. Jacob, you got some thoughts before we get out of here?
And I meant to say that earlier when we were talking about Auburn basketball. Shane is 100% right. That is a major issue for this basketball team. You can't start out slow in the first 4 minutes of each half, because against good teams, like Shane said, it's going to get you beat. Because if you get down by 10 or 15 in the first 4 to 8 minutes of the game, you may not be able to come back against great teams in the tournament. So, Shane, great point. I 100% agree with you, my man.
That's it for hour number one of On the Line. We'll be back with hour number two coming up at 3 p.m. Taking your calls. We want to hear from you. Back with more on the other side of this break.
You are On the Line, live on ESPN 106.7 in Auburn and Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. Online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Hour number two of On the Line, Noah Gardner, Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Fun show so far, and we still got another hour to go. If you missed any of it, go and find the podcast wherever you get your podcast. We've talked some Auburn football today. We've talked some Auburn basketball for the first hour. Takeaways from Auburn's 77-64 win over Ole Miss, as well as Auburn football hiring Ike Hilliard as wide receivers coach. If you want to call in, phone lines are still open, 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. Big thank you to Shane, who called in our previous segment. We're looking forward to hearing from anybody else that wants to call in to the Thursday edition of On the Line. We're going to start off hour number two, though, as we always do, with Making Headlines. Making Headlines. You know, I'm going to start with baseball here because it was on deck for the last segment of hour number one, so that's where we're going to start hour number two with. Auburn baseball exploded for a 12-run win over Troy yesterday. The last two games combined score for Auburn 25-2 with wins over Kansas State and Troy. Auburn now up to 3-1 on the year, including a top 12 victory over Texas Tech that now has dropped to number 20 in D1 at baseball.com's top 25. But what's coming up for Auburn baseball after the win yesterday, where we saw offensive fireworks? Poor Yale. Cold weather baseball team's going to feel the heat of the Southeast. Yale coming down to Plainsman Park this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 6 p.m., 2 p.m., 12 p.m., respectively, is what you're looking at this weekend for Auburn baseball. You know what, man? I would love to go and catch a baseball game coming up pretty soon. It's getting to be that kind of weather, man. It's looking great outside. Perfect, yesterday was perfect.
Perfect baseball weather. Yesterday it was a little warm.
It was muggy.
It was muggy yesterday when I was setting up all the equipment out at Springwood. I was getting a little warm, but today it's warmer too. But next week's supposed to be in like the 50s. That's good baseball weather if you ask me. But, yes, you need to go and catch a baseball game this weekend. I will not be able to. I'll be in Knoxville. But in the coming weeks, I want to start getting out to some baseball games because from what we've seen in the first few games for this Auburn baseball team, they're hitting the ball, and they're also pitching pretty well too. And those are, I mean, that's it. If you can pitch well and you can hit the baseball, you're going to win games. And so far, Auburn has been able to do that with a 13-1 victory over Troy last night. I expect them to do the same type of damage this weekend against Yale. And we talked about it a couple of days ago that Auburn in this non-con schedule should only drop one or two games. And that's for the basic reason of it's baseball. And you drop a game here and there.
Minimum record coming out of non-con play is 15-3 in my mind. And I asked Bill that yesterday on the drive, and he said the same thing. I think just because it's baseball, and I think that's pretty standard for most SEC teams, you don't want to be doing what Auburn did last year, coming out of non-conference play. And we saw that team barely was an SEC tournament team. Definitely not a postseason team in terms of the NCAA tournament. You mentioned pitching. Let's talk a little storylines from yesterday's baseball game because we haven't really talked about this yet. One of the major storylines going into yesterday's midweek game was that Tommy Sheehan was getting the start for Auburn. He was the Friday starter against Oklahoma, only got 33 pitches on opening day. Well, he gets the home opener start for Auburn, the Notre Dame graduate transfer. He's trying to stretch out his arm a little bit. Warmer weather rolls around and said, let's get this man some extra pitches. He throws 10 more than he did in his start back against Oklahoma, but he goes three innings instead of just the one. So they achieve that. He throws 43 total pitches. Faces 13 total batters across three innings, just gives up the one run across one hit, walked three batters. The run was earned, but once again, only one hit across those three innings, had one strikeout, one wild pitch. So still trying to bring him along a little bit. Thomas Sheehan may end up emerging as a rotation guy on the weekend as the season rolls along, but right now it's about stretching his arm out a little bit, and that's why he got the weekend start here. But I imagine he would be available for a bullpen look this weekend. I was talking with Jacob Hillman yesterday. Because he got the start against Troy on a Wednesday, he's not going to be available to start until like Sunday, and that would be a quick turnaround even too, especially for a guy who is someone that's only been held to 33 pitches and one start and 43 in another. So I would imagine that Tommy Sheehan's just a bullpen guy this weekend, but it's still good to see him get out there, pitch well. Hayden Mullins with a bounce-back appearance. He evened his record up at 1-1 on the year after throwing two scoreless innings in relief. And those were the innings that ultimately got him the victory, got him the decision. Just gave up one hit, had two strikeouts. Once again, no runs come across the score, no walks. Mason Barnett had a perfect inning. Three batters faced, three putouts. Brooks Fuller, scoreless inning. Parker Carlson as well. And then Nate LaRue also got to toss a little, according to the box score. So you break it down there. six different guys hop on the mound for Auburn. Only one gives up the run, and after the first inning for Troy, it was shut down for eight straight innings. So Auburn's pitching got the job done. I think that was a good storyline from yesterday when you're looking at Auburn trying to stretch out some of these guys and some guys getting some bounce-back performances like a Hayden Mullins. It was a good day on the mound. Now, it was against Troy, but this Troy team was also undefeated coming into yesterday.
And for Auburn to have multiple pitchers that they can rely on, whether they're starters or out of the bullpen, that's going to be something that the Tigers are going to need as they get through non-con play to establish their rotation, to establish the go-to guys from the bullpen before they hit conference play, because that's not the time to be figuring out who can do it and who can't. And I think having guys who are going to be prepared for conference play is going to be a big deal. And so, yeah, Auburn may not be playing extreme high-level competition in non-con play, but this is the perfect time, especially this weekend against Yale, to get a lot of guys on the mound and get them into the rotation, get their arms working a little bit as we get into the fifth, sixth, and seventh games of the year.
Auburn kept their hot hitting going from this previous Sunday against Kansas State. Some guys that showed out, Sonny DeShera still, I'm pretty sure he walks out there with his bat on fire. Like, this man has to carry it with oven mitts. It's on fire right now. 2-for-2 at the plate yesterday with a sack fly. 3 runs scored himself. 4 RBIs, had a home run. Blake Rambush in the leadoff spot continues to torch it on the base paths right now. 3-for-4 day yesterday. 2 runs scored. No RBIs for him, but once again, hard for a guy in that leadoff spot to really rack those up. Ryan Dial had 3 runs scored. He was 1-for-1 at the plate. 2-for-4 was Brody Moore. He scored 3 runs. 6 RBI for Bryson Ware. 4 of those came on a grand slam in the bottom of the first or bottom of the second. I can't remember which. He was 2-for-4 at the plate as well. And Cole Foster, 2-for-4. Just some of the standout guys in a 13-hit parade for Auburn baseball that also saw 13 runs come across. Once again, the home runs going to Sonny DeShera, his first of the year, and Bryson Ware, also his first of the year. Doubles going to DeShera and Cole Foster, and a sack fly, obviously, like I mentioned, to Sonny DeShera. It's a good day for Auburn baseball yesterday. Once again, against Troy, but Troy was also 4-0 coming into the game. Auburn was 2-1 going into it. Obviously, those records mean a little bit different things compared to the competition that they were playing, but Troy still could very well be an NCAA tournament team at the end of the year. That's a good midweek performance, and Troy was going to give everything they had against it, and Auburn gets the win 13-1. Let's move to our next headline. We talked a little Auburn football to open up the show. Let's go back to it. Auburn football hires Ike Hilliard as wide receivers coach yesterday. We got your first thoughts on it today. Let's go back to those.
And for anybody that wants to call in and give their thoughts on this coaching hire, give us a call here on the line, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-382-7502. We want to hear from you on your thoughts about Auburn baseball, basketball, or the topic right now, Auburn football, hiring Ike Hilliard as the wide receivers coach. And I like the hire, man. We talked about it in the first hour, and we'll talk about it again right now. I like the hire. There's very few negatives as of right now that I can see with this hire. The guy has played high-level college football. He's played at the highest level in the NFL, and he's coached at the highest level in the NFL as a wide receivers coach, and he's been successful doing so at all levels of his career, playing and coaching. He's developed and played, or coached and played with some of the best guys to ever play the game. He's developed guys from nothing to greatness, and he's gotten guys from the pros, gotten guys from college to go to the pros, and he's been good and had success everywhere that he has been. And so, as of right now, I really can't find a negative besides maybe, recruiting worries, and that's okay, but he's got so many.
But you don't know. You don't know, right? He still could end up being a knockout hire on the recruiting trail, just like Nick Eason was. Just because he hasn't done it before doesn't mean he won't be good at it.
And he has a lot of Southern ties to Louisiana and to Florida and places like that in the Southeast, to where he may not have a ton of recruiting experience, but his experience of playing and coaching and then his ties to different states in the South, that can all make up for the lack of recruiting experience that he may have. And I think he's going to be a fine recruiter. He's already offered the top JUCO wide receiver a scholarship today. And so I think it's going to be an experience. It's going to be an experiment, but he has the same mindset as everybody else on this coaching staff now, and every coach on the staff is thinking the exact same way: hard-nosed, earn it football. And I think he is no different than anybody else on this staff. I like the hire, and there's very, very few downsides to this hire as of right now.
I think the only thing that you could bring up that you could possibly have reservations on it is, what's he going to be as a recruiter? Is he going to be able to build those relationships? Is he going to be able to network? Because he's never had to do it before. That's the only thing that you could possibly be reserved about it on. Because, and the counterpoint to that, though, is recruiting is extremely important. I don't want people to misconstrue what I'm about to say. Recruiting is extremely important because you know all the things that I've said about 2023 and 2024 and how uncomfortable I am about the future with this program, with the way things have been recruited, not only under Gus Malzahn, but now also at the start for Brian Harsin. You can't have back-to-back number 18, number 19 recruiting classes in college football in the SEC and expect to be successful at the level in which Auburn's expectations warrant you needing to be successful at in order to keep your job. But the message and the approach, the mentality is clear. You're going to have to win in 2022 if you even want to be able to have a – if you even want to be here for 2023, right? This is a guy that can help your wide receiver room be productive enough and become productive enough to where you can still be here in 2023. And receivers, as you pointed out, is one of the biggest concerns for Auburn going into 2022. This is a guy that can help develop those guys. Another point that I want to make about this that I like that I don't think has been talked about enough. I may be a Cleveland Browns fan, but I respect Mike Tomlin. And he is a great football coach. I can recognize that. I like the fact that he's been under Mike Tomlin the last 2 years. He's going to have picked up something from Mike Tomlin that has helped elevate his coaching career. Previously, before he was with Tomlin, he was at the Redskins, right? Now Washington football team, all the way to what are they now? The Washington, what are they again?
The Commanders, is that right?
That's right, the Commanders. That completely went out of my brain. For some reason, I kept thinking Guardians. I was like, nope, that's baseball. That's Cleveland. What are we thinking here?
That's right, isn't it, Trevor? It's the Commanders. Okay, that's
the
what
Commanders.
I thought.
Why are you asking Trevor? Why are you, you're not
well, you didn't
sufficient
know.
With... I did know. As soon as you said Commanders, I said, yeah. Like, oh, okay. That's who I'm messing with
you. Well, now with the AFL or whatever it is, there's a whole different set
Sounds
of,
like an XFL team.
Yeah.
Sounds like
USFL
a USFL
or
team.
Whatever it is, yeah. But hey, a bunch of Auburn players got drafted in that USFL, by the way.
Sal Cannella's back in the league.
Yeah, there's multiple guys
back
got drafted.
Playing football again.
Yeah, back. Yeah, they got drafted playing football. I don't know if they're in the league, but...
They are in a league.
They're in a league, not the league. But no, in the first hour, we posed the question, and I want to pose it again to all of our listeners. If you want to call in and give us your thoughts on this, with Auburn filling in the wide receivers coach with Ike Hilliard, how does this affect your opinion of the offensive coaching staff and then the coaching staff as a whole heading into spring ball? We want to hear from you. Give us a call here on the line, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-382-7502. Give us your thoughts on this coaching staff as we head into spring ball with the new hire at wide receiver coach.
Moving on to our next headline, Auburn basketball handled business against Ole Miss yesterday, 77-64 to advance to 25-3 overall.
Auburn looked good. The offense looked very well and very good. I liked the movement that Auburn had with and without the basketball. I liked the passing ability between all the players. The half-court offense did not get stagnant. Players were... The shooting was not fantastic for Auburn. They definitely could have made more shots than they did, especially some open looks that they had. But overall, and the defense kind of got sloppy at times, kind of failing to get back on defense. Start of the first half and start of the second half. I think the first 4 minutes of each half were where you could look at the game and say, okay, Auburn did not play well in that 8 minutes. But other than that, I don't really have any complaints outside of those 8 minutes because – I think Auburn played a lot better. I think they looked better offensively. I like that Zepp Jasper hopefully gets back in a groove from last night. He had 15 points, shot the ball extremely well, and looked very comfortable and confident with the basketball, shooting the basketball. Wendell Green did his thing. Jabari didn't shoot the ball very well, but he still had double-digit points, so he still had put his mark on the game. And what about Devin Cambridge with the putback slam, the one-hander off the rebound? Did you see that?
Yeah, that's every game.
It's still cool.
It was cool, but I'm used to it now.
Don't downsize that. I don't know how
you can follow up what happened in the Georgia game.
I will not take I ain't taking the Devin Cambridge slander on this radio station. Absolutely not.
No, I love Cambridge, man.
That was
I
an
love
unbelievable
it. It was a good
putback.
It was a good play.
The Jabari turnaround, which I thought was going in, it looked so good. And then Cambridge out of nowhere just the one hand put back slam. That's SportsCenter top 10, man. You downsize that.
You know what I said in that moment? I was watching the game with my father-in-law and some of my other family, and I pointed at it and I said, that guy should be ashamed of himself. That doesn't happen if he boxes out. There's one Ole Miss player that boxes out, and then there's another Ole Miss player that just is looking at the rim, having the time of his life, seeing Devin Cambridge take off like an airplane.
Ball watching.
Man, I'm like, what is wrong with you? This is why you are 13 and 15, whoever you are. You should be boxing now. What is wrong with you? Let's head to the phone lines, 334-321-1390. Keith on the line with us. Keith, what's up?
Yeah, I just want to talk about the new coaching hire. I think it's the home run hire. I mean, the pedigree and everything in his background is about as good as you can get. And I just hope that he likes Auburn and his family likes Auburn because, you know, he's used to moving around. And if the NFL calls or homeschool calls or whatever, you know, and he leaves, I just don't think people ought to hold that against Harsin. I mean, just going after the best man he can, and you know, hopefully he'll like it here and want to raise his family. I don't know how many children he has or how old they are.
Yeah, I'm not too sure on his family and all of that. And you know, it's okay to be worried about a guy with his track record coming in, and if he does a good job at Auburn, if the NFL comes calling for him to take a bigger position, or for him, if he goes to his alma mater, to take a bigger position, those are legitimate concerns. But until he starts coaching and can actually perform and produce some good play on the field, I wouldn't worry about that too much yet. But I agree with you, Keith. I think it's a home run hire, and I think he's got the track record and the experience to back it up.
He's got five children, to answer your question. I don't know how old they are, but judging by the fact that he is, what, 45, 46 years old, and the fact that he's got five kids, yeah, I would imagine they're probably not too old.
Yeah, well, maybe they'll like Auburn. And you know, he just got roots in Florida and Louisiana. That's always a good thing. And as far as the basketball, you know, I'm not the biggest basketball. I'm a big fan, but I'm not as knowledgeable about basketball. But just looking at the team, you know, it just seems like Al Flanagan and Camden, or Cambridge, they have got a lot of untapped potential. I mean, they got all the athletic ability in the world, and, you know, the guards played a lot better. But if those guys come around and play up to their ability, you know, the sky's the limit, I think.
No, you're exactly right. I think Devin Cambridge and Alan Flanagan both have a lot of upside, a lot of athleticism. Of course, Alan Flanagan's still battling back from an Achilles injury. He's still not 100% back from that. And then Cambridge, I think he does his, and plays his role well. He can jump out of the building, he can grab rebounds, and he can dunk the ball. And I think he plays his role extremely well. Keith, we appreciate the call.
Okay, see you.
That was Keith here on the line, talking about a little Auburn football and a little Auburn basketball. If you want to toot or call in, give us your thoughts here on the show, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-382-7502. We want to hear from you.
I think something else to talk about last night with Auburn against Ole Miss was Auburn's backcourt, and Keith alluded to it there, and this is a point that I want to go back to before we move on to our next headline and before we go to break. But it was good to see Zepp Jasper be confident shooting the basketball.
Confidence, I mean,
I brought up the fact that he hasn't registered a field goal in a game until last night since January. He, for someone that was shooting 36% from three this year, he hadn't registered a three since January, right? And I think it had actually been longer than the Oklahoma game. I'm about to pull that up. The last time he had a three before last night was January 25th against Missouri. A game where he went 1-for-3 and 1-for-2. I mean, we're just not used to seeing this guy take a lot of shots. And for somebody that is shooting 37% nearly from three, it was good to see 4 out of 5 shots go in last night. It was good to see him be comfortable. I think it took some of the weight off of the other guards for the necessity of them being able to score. I said back in hour number one, kind of, you know, thinking about it as I went along in that segment, I was like, you know, it's probably a good thing that just two of Auburn's guards do well from a scoring standpoint, and it should probably be at least one of those, a point guard. They need to have one good game. Like, one of the point guards needs to have a good game for Auburn to be successful. And unfortunately, you look back at the last little bit of games for Auburn out of the backcourt, none of the point guards have really been playing well or haven't been efficient. Wendell's had a couple of decent games from a passing standpoint, but they haven't been overly efficient from a shooting standpoint, and that was shown on the broadcast last night from his three-point percentage. They got to be more efficient. Last night, they were efficient. I liked the guard play. KD didn't have a great game. He was 0 for 6, but you once again hit that two-guard mark where there was at least two guards that had a good game, and that just so happened to be both of Auburn's point guards.
And they're not turning the ball over. That's the big thing. Not turning the basketball over has so much effect on how the team plays and how the outcome of a basketball game. We talk about turnovers all the time, but it really is one of the biggest factors in a basketball game is how often a team turns the basketball over, and then not just the team, to break it down even more, the guards and the ball handlers turning the basketball over comparing to how many assists they get. Because that's a direct comparison. Are you assisting your team and getting them points, or are you giving the basketball away to the other team and allowing them to score? And so I think last night, Zeb Jasper, yeah, he had two turnovers, but he shot the basketball with unbelievable confidence. When he shot the ball, he knew it was going in, and you felt it was going in. There was no hesitation. He had an open three, and he had a beautiful stroke, and he knocked it down.
He shot nearly 40% from three at College of Charleston, right? You would love to have seen that be more of an impact since January 25th, right?
And I want to see him continue. I want to see him continue to do it. If he's got the open look, I want him to have the confidence to take it and knock it down, because obviously Wendell Green's got the confidence to take it. He'll shoot it from the other basket if you let him. And KD Johnson will do the same thing, either that or dribble between his legs, put his head down, and go to the basket to draw a foul. So I agree. I think out of those three players, two of three have to have a good game for Auburn to be successful in the long run.
Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to play a little on-the-line Q&A, as well as we'll have the Radio Alabama Sports Minute. You're listening to the Thursday edition of On the Line. Phone lines still open. We want to hear from you.
Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins, Noah Gardner with you today on the Thursday edition of the show. We've been talking about making headlines. We've been covering Auburn football, Auburn basketball. We talked a little Auburn baseball today as well. But before we get into On the Line Q&A, let's take a listen to the Radio Alabama Sports Minute.
I'm Noah Gardner with your Radio Alabama Sports Minute. Third-ranked Auburn men's basketball took down Ole Miss 77-64 in Auburn Arena on Wednesday night. The win advanced the Tigers to 25-3 overall and 13-2 in the SEC with a one-game lead atop the conference standings. The Tigers shot 46% as a team while holding Ole Miss to just 38% from the field. Some standout performers: Walker Kessler was dangerously close to his third triple-double of the season, totaling 12 points, 10 rebounds, and 8 blocks. Freshman phenom Jabari Smith had 15 points, 9 rebounds, and 5 assists. Auburn's next game is on Saturday at 3 p.m. as they take on number 17 Tennessee in Knoxville on ESPN. A look at some other college basketball scores from yesterday. Number 6 Kentucky overcame an 8-point halftime deficit to beat LSU 71-66. Number 7 Duke held on to beat Virginia on the road 65-61. Number 11 Providence and Xavier went to 3 overtimes, with the Friars winning 99-92. Auburn football completed its coaching staff with the hire of Ike Hilliard as wide receivers coach. In addition to Hilliard's 12-year playing career in the NFL, he has been coaching in the league since 2011. Most recently, he was the wide receivers coach for the Pittsburgh Steelers for the 2020 and 2021 seasons. I'm Noah Gardner, and that's your Radio Alabama Sports Minute.
Back on the Line, Noah Gardner, Jacob Goins with you for a couple of minutes here before we head to break again. We'll have Zach Blackerby of Locked On Auburn and Auburn Daily coming up at 3:30, so stay tuned for that. It's time for a little on-the-line Q&A. We want to hear from you. If you've got any questions for us, phone lines are open for a couple minutes here, 334-321-1390, or toll-free at 888-382-7502. And my first question to Jacob before he'll ask me a question: will Aaron Rodgers be in Green Bay next season? You're the Packers fan here. There are reports that the news could be coming soon.
There are reports that it could be coming soon. And the Packers are expected to let Devontae Adams, like, test free agency. And so that may have an impact. They're still trying to figure out a long-term deal on him. But my prediction for the Green Bay Packers is that Aaron Rodgers, the man, the myth, the legend, will be wearing that green jersey on week one of the NFL. Aaron Rodgers is going to be a Green Bay Packer next season. I think they find a way to get it done. I think Rodgers still wants to be in Green Bay. Of course, Green Bay wants him here. As long as they can give him what he wants, I think he'll have one more ride in Green Bay.
Doesn't that bother you, though, that Aaron Rodgers basically holds the Packers hostage for everything that he wants and he still doesn't win?
Yes, it does. But
I'm not saying that you should move on, because me and you did have that conversation a couple weeks ago that there's no guarantee that you even make the playoffs again for a decade if you move on from Aaron Rodgers.
That's the problem.
I just want to say, how does that make you like him a ton, you know, that he's going to hold your franchise hostage and just fail to win?
Because we have nothing better. There's nothing better behind him, unfortunately. So my prediction is, yes, Aaron Rodgers will be a Green Bay Packer. And I think if he comes back, I think they'll find a way to get Devontae Adams for one more year as well.
I think so, too. I think he's going to be playing in green and gold. I think he's going to be a Packer. I'm with you. They've always found a way to work it out. I think this is just part of his many attention-grabbing ploys to be able to get whatever he wants in Green Bay. And, you know, I can't believe that he still hasn't been able to win a Super Bowl, but, you know, that may...
He's won one.
Yeah, a decade ago.
Yeah, get out of here. He's won one.
I was in middle school.
Yeah, I was 10 years old. So.
Definitely was more than a decade ago. I was in middle school.
Yeah, 12 years ago.
Let's take a quick break. On the other side of these commercials, we'll have Zach Blackerby of Locked on Auburn and Auburn Daily. Looking forward to that conversation coming up in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. Minutes into hour number two of On the Line. Just about two more segments here to go on the Thursday edition of the show. Noah Gardner, Jacob Goins with you. Now joining us on the program, we got Zach Blackerby of Locked on Auburn and Auburn Daily with us here on the show. Zach, how you doing today, my man?
I'm good, guys. How are y'all?
We're doing great, and we're glad to have you on today. We want to talk to you a little bit about Auburn football before we get into Auburn basketball. Auburn hiring Ike Hilliard as wide receivers coach. Seems like you really like this hire. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think it's a home run. I think he instantly becomes one of the most influential coaches on this coaching staff as soon as he steps foot in Auburn. I mean, this is a position group that needs an instant shot in the arm as far as, you know, how are they going to take that step forward and kind of getting that production in 2022, because there's very little returning production. Shed Jackson's it, and I think you can talk yourself into Shed Jackson if you want to, but still, I mean, there's so many dudes who have had a hard time getting open consistently, and I think bringing in an NFL guy, a guy who's played in the league for a long time and then coached in it for a decade, is something to really look at. And, you know, you look at some of the dudes that he has coached at the NFL level, whether it's a Deontay Johnson or a Chase Claypool last year, even like, you know, him developing Ray McLeod as the season went on, because Juju Smith-Schuster got hurt pretty early on in the season. He's shown that he's able to work with different types of receivers. Terry McLaurin has credited him with having, you know, a strong rookie season because of Ike Hilliard, and then worked with guys that are kind of speedsters like DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon. Malcolm Johnson Jr., you know, who's a speedster, maybe he can benefit. And then you also have guys that are possession receivers that he's worked with. Guys like Robert Woods and Brandon Marshall, Santana Moss, Stevie Johnson. He's worked with some really big names, and some of the better receiving years that they've had in their careers came when they were playing under him. And I think that is no coincidence.
Taking a look at his most recent location, the Pittsburgh Steelers, this is something that I've brought up a little bit on today's show. I have a lot of respect for Mike Tomlin. What type of traits do you think he may have picked up in his time in Pittsburgh?
So I actually recorded a conversation earlier today with Chris Carter. He's a Locked On Steelers host, and it'll be on tomorrow's edition of Locked On Auburn. But he talked about, you know, what it's like coaching under Mike Tomlin. I mean, the Steelers are very much we have a certain bar, and if you do not meet that, you're not going to be here anymore. Does that sound familiar, guys?
Yes, it does.
A little bit like Brian Harsin, doesn't it? So, you know, I think it's going to be a similar type mindset. I think the biggest adjustment, guys, is going to be what's obvious. And we talked about this a year ago when Nick Eason came from the Bengals to coach Auburn is, okay, these guys should be able to recruit. We just haven't really seen it. We haven't really seen them do that. And, of course, there's also the dynamic of working with professionals versus working with student-athletes. That's obviously a dynamic that he's going to have to adjust to. But it seems like he's going to be all over that.
Zach, you kind of touched on it there just for a second, but how does Ike Hilliard fit into this narrative and the coaching staff that Brian Harsin and the mindset that Brian Harsin is trying to build with the coaching staff and the program here at Auburn?
Well, you know, Brian Harsin's got a type, and that's not a bad thing at all. I think he wants somebody that's going to be able to hold guys accountable, and also I think he wants dudes who's going to be able to sit in the living rooms of 4- and 5-star wide receivers and look, you know, the recruit in the eyes and look his family in the eyes and say, hey, I know what it takes to get to the NFL. He did it while he was, you know, a stud at Florida with a top 10 draft pick in the, I think it was the 97 draft, as well as, you know, he's coached these dudes. He knows what these guys are able to do and what an NFL wide receiver looks like. And, you know, perhaps he can get them there. He hasn't done that yet. But as far as the culture goes, it seems like, and this is the NFL mindset trickling down to college, is, you know, if you do not do something right, you will no longer be employed. Now, you can't do that in the middle of the season, you know, in college. I guess you technically could, but that wouldn't be a good look. But, you know, I think that's something that, you know, Harsin has a very NFL-type mindset where it's all about football and it's all about, you know, focusing on how do you win this week. You know, you hear Harsin say 1-0, 1-0, 1-0. You hear the players say that throughout the season as well. I think this is going to be something that's similar. It's very NFL-heavy, and I think it fits in with what Brian Harsin's trying to do, guys.
The buzzword of the month has been alignment, whether you talk about it all the way to the backdoor stuff, the stuff at the top and the stuff that we saw at the beginning of this month, all the way down to everybody being on the same page with the coaching staff. What is your take about how this coaching staff, namely Brian Harsin, has recovered from what happened a few weeks ago in terms of alignment? And kind of take that in whatever direction you will. How does this hire maybe fit into all that?
It seems like everything with the football program has been really positive since the drama surrounding Harsin ended. And, you know, the university kind of put out a statement saying they were backing him, which is great. You're seeing recruiting efforts pick up. It seems like, you know, I said throughout all of that, the best case scenario is Brian Harsin comes out of this remaining Auburn's head coach and he changes his approach on a few things. And one of those things was his recruiting efforts. They went super narrow and went after specific guys. And you see programs like Clemson do that. You know, Clemson doesn't offer a whole lot of players, and so their offer holds more weight. I think maybe he thought he could come in and kind of do that, and it didn't really work. So you're seeing kind of a wider net across prospects, which is good. And so you're seeing more people be more receptive to Auburn because you're hitting more folks. And so I think that's a positive thing. You're hearing more people being interested in Junior Day, as well as, you know, potentially visiting Auburn over the summer, which is great. And then since then, I think the promotion of Eric Kiesau as OC, I think it makes a ton of sense, because if Harsin's going to be running the offense, get somebody that he knows and trusts, and, you know, these guys can probably finish each other's sentences. So I love that. You know, keeping Zach Etheridge was a huge win, and promoting him is a no-brainer. It seems like a lot of the players are really high on, you know, elevating Coach Rock to outside linebacker and special teams, which is obviously something that I think is going to be exciting, because, you know, Auburn was in a lot of close games last year. There'll probably be in a lot of close games this year, and maybe something on special teams kind of helps you out a little bit as far as setting up the offense, which is going to need some help, I think. And then obviously, you know, with this hire with Ike Hilliard, I think the last 2 weeks have been really good for Auburn football.
Talk a little Auburn basketball now with Zach Blackerby of Locked On Auburn and Auburn Daily. Auburn 77-64 victors over the Ole Miss Rebels. Takeaways from last night's game, where we saw a couple of, or really one unlikely candidate pop off for Auburn, and Zepp Jasper.
Yeah, Zepp Jasper playing a little bit more aggressive, and he talked about that after the game. And, you know, Bruce kind of called him out, it sounds like, a little bit. Saying that he wanted more aggression from his point guard. And so Zepp answered the call, because Zepp is one of the most coachable players Auburn will ever see. I think he's fantastic. And so I love that he's been able to do that. I mean, he shot at the same clip, not from three, but from the floor as he has all season. The sample size was just bigger. And so that's something you love to see from Zepp. And then, you know, his other guards, Wendell, you know, he's just a high-volume guy. I mean, not super efficient, but, you know, when he's on, he's on. He hasn't been on, you know, while Auburn's been in this quote-unquote slump. And then, you know, Katie Johnson, I mean, the guy can't buy a basket right now. And you could tell he's really forcing it because Auburn is so much better when Katie Johnson is scoring. So they've got to figure out how to get him involved and get some of his shots to fall. And then, you know, Jabari didn't have as efficient of a night shooting as he's had over the last few weeks, but still was able to, you know, I mean, he almost got a double-double. I think he had, what, 9 rebounds? And then I think he had a handful of assists, too. So still being active on the stat sheet, which is great. But, you know, this Auburn team is deep, and different guys can step up each and every night. But I know you guys have been all about, you know, despite losing 2 games in February and not being a big deal, and I agree with you. I think the team's going to be fine. But all in all, you know, Ole Miss isn't a good team. It's still a team that Bruce Pearl has had trouble with since he's been at Auburn. So, you know, there's always some kind of extra moral ump when you beat a team that you typically have a hard time with. But still, bottom line, you were at home. Ole Miss isn't a good team. It's all about what happens on Saturday when they go to Knoxville.
Well, Zach, I'm glad you bring that up because that was going to be my next question. As Auburn wins the game against Ole Miss, now they travel to Knoxville on Saturday, which has now become a huge matchup for the SEC regular season victor in the regular season standings. What is your take on this upcoming matchup between Auburn and Tennessee on Saturday afternoon?
I think it's going to be tough. You know, I had Zepp Jasper on my show earlier this week, and he essentially said, you know, that these players are not going to let Bruce Pearl lose to Tennessee. You know, they feel like Bruce was disrespected by Tennessee, and it sounds like they all take that personally, which is good. I mean, Bruce is really good about, you know, holding his cards and getting his team fired up when they need it most. I don't think he plays it every game. I think he plays it on the big ones. And since Bruce has been at Auburn, he's done a good job of taking care of business against Tennessee. And so will that carry over this weekend? I don't know. I think you look at a lot of factors, and a lot of things point towards the Vols in this one. I think they're playing better basketball right now. You know, they've struggled with defending down low, which is good because obviously Walker Kessler is very good. It's just going to depend on how the game is called to some extent, and can Auburn adjust to how the game is called? I think if Auburn can have their full rotation throughout the full, you know, 40 minutes, I think Auburn's got a good shot. But that just hasn't really happened on the road consistently in SEC play. So, I mean, there's just a lot of variables that go into it.
Zach, we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. Tell everybody what you got going on with Auburn Daily and Locked On Auburn and how people can keep up with you.
Yeah, auburndaily.com. That'll take you to Sports Illustrated's Auburn coverage, which we launched 2 weeks ago. So very cool to be a part of that, and the reception has been great. So be sure to check that out and bookmark it and check it out every day. And then, of course, Locked On Auburn is available wherever you get your podcasts. It's also available every morning on YouTube if you're into that sort of thing. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Zach. Hope you have a good rest of your afternoon, my man.
Hey, you too, guys. Thanks.
That was Zach Blackerby of the Locked On Auburn podcast as well as Auburn Daily. Before we get out of here to go to our last segment, Jacob, thoughts and takeaways from our conversation with Zach Blackerby.
He made great points. We started out with football, and he loves the hire of the wide receiver coach Ike Hilliard, and I do too. I think it's a home run hire. There's very little downfall to this hire, and I've been saying it all day that only time will tell if it is truly a home run hire. But so far, it looks pretty good with his track record. And then with Auburn basketball, Auburn looked good against Ole Miss. He said so as well. The guards stepped up and played. Of course, KD Johnson in a little bit of a rut. Can't really buy a basket right now. But he's going to get there as the season goes on. And then the game at Tennessee on Saturday. Zach is 100% right. Bruce knows what games he needs to turn it on to get his team fired up and ready to go. I see Auburn going into this game ready to play. They do not want to lose to Tennessee because of Bruce Pearl. And I think this team, more than any team he's ever had, will go to battle with him and will go into enemy territory and back him up 100% of the time.
On top of that, I think they know how important it is in terms of trying to win the regular season championship. Auburn loses on Saturday and Kentucky wins. Uh-oh. That means somebody's sharing something. And we don't want that.
And Auburn and Bruce Pearl does not want that. Bruce Pearl talks about winning the SEC regular season title, winning it outright, because that launches you into March, into the SEC tournament and into the NCAA tournament.
Means just a little bit more that you can say you won this league outright over Kentucky, especially on the recruiting trail. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we are going to wrap up On the Line Q&A. Jacob still got a question to ask me about college basketball, as well as we will tell you what's coming up in college basketball tonight with What's On Tonight and give you our final takes. You're listening to the Thursday edition of On the Line.
Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins, Noah Gardner with you today on the Thursday edition of the show. Just a few more minutes left before we get out of here. But to start the final segment of the show, let's take a listen to what's on TV tonight.
Hey everybody, it's Noah Gardner with What's On Tonight. New episodes of Law & Order run from 7 to 10 p.m. on NBC. Movie selection for tonight, Draft Day, is on AMC at 7. And live sports, let's take a look at the college basketball schedule for tonight. 6 p.m. time slot, Temple is at Memphis on ESPN2, and Maryland is at Indiana on FS1. 8 p.m. time slot, number 1 Gonzaga is at Bumble Team San Francisco on ESPN2. Ranked battle in the Big Ten as number 22 Ohio State clashes with number 15 Illinois on FS1. Ranked Pac-12 teams are on the road at 8:30 on ESPN. Number 12 UCLA is at Oregon. Rounding out the night at 10 p.m., number 2 Arizona is at Utah on FS1, and number 16 USC is at Oregon State on ESPN2. The NBA is back from the All-Star break with two games on TNT. At 6:30, it's the Celtics at the Nets, and at 9, it's the Warriors at the Trailblazers. I'm Noah Gardner, and that's what's on TV tonight.
That was What's on TV Tonight, brought to you by Noah Gardner himself. But Noah, I want to finish up the On the Line Q&A because we did not finish that up just a second ago. So here's my question to you, my friend. What was the most meaningful result in college basketball last night?
I think it was Rutgers-Michigan, and Michigan finding a way to beat Rutgers 71-62. I mean, there's a couple of other candidates here, but something that actually affects NCAA tournament it had NCAA tournament implications more than any of the other games last night. I mean, Kentucky beating LSU is a meaningful result. I think that's probably my second contender there. But Duke only beating Virginia by 4 didn't really carry a whole lot. I don't think Duke's placement with where they're at right now really changes a whole lot with a win or a loss in that game. And their ability to recover from a loss, I think, was still rather high. Providence beating Xavier doesn't really change people's opinion of Providence, and an Xavier loss doesn't really change there. But Michigan is a bubble team right now, currently listed as one of the last 4 teams in, according to Joe Lenardi. Joe Lenardi also moved Rutgers solidly into the tournament on the 10 line back on Tuesday when he released his bracketology. Now I wonder if that throws some of this into question going down the stretch. Rutgers had an extremely hot stretch of games where they won 3 out of their 4 games where they were playing ranked teams. They're now, you look at their last 5 games, they've lost back-to-back games. They're 16-11 overall, 10-7 in conference play. Their last 2 losses, and a 12-point loss to Purdue on the road, now a 9-point loss to Michigan last night. Michigan's trying to play their way into the tournament, and Michigan getting a dub last night, I think, solidly helps them out in the bubble there. 15-11 overall, 9-7 in the conference, a 9-point win over Rutgers without Juwan Howard. Their first game without Juwan Howard since this past weekend.
That's right.
And they beat Rutgers at home. They've got 4 games left, and it's all against potentially ranked teams. Number 15 Illinois at home this Sunday. 3 straight home games coming up, by the way. Michigan State on March 1st, number 25 Iowa on March 3rd, and then at number 22 Ohio State on March 6th. And really, outside of that Illinois game, I don't think this Michigan team is overmatched by the talent they will be facing against Michigan State, Iowa, and Ohio State. This is the last 4 team right now. They're at 15-11. That doesn't sound like a tournament team. They have got their opportunity in front of them, and it started. Rutgers was a must-win game for Michigan to stay in the field.
I mean, they're about to be playing tournament teams, and to get into the tournament, you've got to beat teams that are also going to be in the tournament.
The NCAA tournament has begun for Michigan.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. It has begun, and it started last night.
It's not win out, but they need some big wins.
They have to have a winning record in the next few games, including the Big Ten tournament. They're going to have to make a little push in that tournament as well.
I don't know. I think 2-2 gets them into the tournament.
Even with a bad Big Ten tournament?
No, I don't think they can have a bad Big Ten tournament, but I still think 2-2, that includes potentially two ranked wins for them down the stretch. I think that gets them into the field. 2-2 would put them at 17-13. Win a game of the Big Ten tournament, you're at 18-13 with the wins that they'll have and with the respect that Michigan's name carries and the fact that there'll be several games above 500 in the Big Ten play. I think it gets them into the field. The fact that they are currently last four in, and at the time that they were listed as last four in, they were 14-11. If they go 2-2 over their next four games, I know you're shaking your head. They are 9-7, though, still in conference play in the Big Ten, which is a difficult conference. Have gotten a lot better. Enough. If they hold serve here, go 2-2, and win a couple of those home games against ranked teams, this is a team that's going to be playing in the NCAA tournament. And, I think they'll have deserved it. I think they'll have played their way in.
I mean, that's fair enough, especially if they have a winning record in what has become a stronger Big Ten conference than it was at the beginning of the season. So I don't necessarily see them as a huge NCAA tournament team, but if they do what they got to do, I could see them sneaking in there. So that was a good game from last night.
What's your most meaningful result from last night? You think it's LSU-Kentucky? That's my second one. The other one that I think had the biggest implications, regardless of result.
I would say so, just because LSU is still looking for that big win late in the season because they have not played great basketball the last month or so.
Definitely tournament team, but it could help them on the seed line if they were able to beat Kentucky.
And then Kentucky, with the win, they kept themselves in the race for the SEC regular season title. And so I think it was a huge game, and I think LSU will still make the tournament, but they needed a win to boost them in the rankings a little bit on the seed line, like you mentioned. And then for Kentucky, they are still without two of their starting five, and they were down by 8 at home at the half, and they came back and they beat LSU. That's a big game for the Wildcats. They've got a tough schedule to finish out, but that was probably the most meaningful game, in my opinion, last night.
All right, looking at the schedule tonight, same question. Most meaningful game in college basketball tonight. Have you had any time to think about this whatsoever?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, and I had a chance to look at it a little bit earlier. I think you've got to look at the ranked matchup for tonight, Ohio State and Illinois in the Big Ten. We just got done talking about the Big Ten, and we're going to go right back to them. That's the only ranked matchup tonight. And you could also look at the Big Ten. Indiana is on the line of trying
Indiana's
to get in
Indiana's the last
or out.
Four in. They need this one against Maryland tonight.
They're playing against Maryland at home. That's got to be a win for the Hoosiers if they want any chance to make the NCAA tournament. But the game of the night is Ohio State at Illinois. Big-time top 25 matchup.
I don't disagree with you. That is the game of the night tonight. But I'm going to talk about tournament implications, namely the one line. Number one in the country and number two in the country are both on the road tonight. And if you fall asleep, Gonzaga's got their conference tournament next week. They're at a 20-plus win San Francisco team. I'm just saying, they only won by 12 last time they played. It's kind of funny that I'm saying they only won by 12. Look, they're at San Francisco, 8 p.m. ESPN2, and then Arizona's at Utah at 10 on FS1. If one of those teams loses, I'm not saying that the one line gets shaken up if Gonzaga loses. If Arizona loses, the one line could get shook up a little bit. All of a sudden, Kentucky's like, it's our time. We deserve to be in.
There's no doubt. But let me say this. Gonzaga's favored by 10.5 at San Francisco tonight. They're going to cover big time. You want to make a little bit of money? Take Gonzaga minus 10.5. They're going to win because San Francisco, they may be a 20-win basketball team, but they play the same teams that Gonzaga does. So there's that. But Arizona, I'm still not completely sold. I think they're playing good ball. Not that Utah's a great team, but you're on the road in conference. It's hard to win. So those do have implications of the seed lines. But the biggest game, again, of the night, number 22, Ohio State, at number 15, Illinois. I think it's going to be a fantastic basketball game, man. Big Ten has gotten really, really good, so watch out.
I do want to point something out about the Gonzaga-San Francisco game. San Francisco's a bubble team. They win this game tonight.
They're in.
They're in the field, undeniably. They got a lot to play for. They're at home, 22-7. Dons hosting the number one team in the nation, the Gonzaga Bulldogs. That's it for another edition of On the Line. We'll be back with you tomorrow, same time, same place. You know where to find us.